Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Monday, April the 19th, as we like to do once a week. We'll be chatting with our friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Lots to get into today, lots on the table today. The violence in our streets, I mean, it's just getting nasty. You've got a problem with public schools, and you're starting to see, finally, parents really standing up to the school system, both private and public. Maxine Waters, what can I say about Maxine? We'll talk about that. There's apparently a crisis on the border, and the vice president is flying to Guatemala, so we'll try to figure that one out. Court packing, a lot of talk about court packing. I don't think it's going to happen, but there's certainly a lot of talk about it. The infrastructure bill that seems to include everything these days, not just infrastructure. And then, of course, we'll talk about the Iran nuclear deal, some interesting things happening with that. So let me say hello to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, I mean, that's a lot to talk about in one show. I hope we can get to all of it, George. I mean, it is amazing, Bill, how much is on the table.
It is. And what is also amazing in light of all this is the fact that we're told that the president is rising in the public opinion polls, even though his administration is falling apart. Now, some people have looked at these polls, you know, with two eyes, as they say, and they're not finding that. They're finding a lot of problems underneath. But the country is in very poor shape. I fear for our foreign policy. The Iranian nuclear talks, something you mentioned in the introduction, apparently are going all in Iran's direction, which doesn't surprise me considering who we sent as negotiators. And the Chinese show no signs of any real cooperation with the United States. I hate to say it, but you kind of wonder at times which country is being represented in Washington by the United States government. Because it doesn't seem to be this one, you know? I mean, our borders are open, our schools are closed, and now there's even a report, I can't confirm, that part of the Iran nuclear deal will be that we will compensate Iran for the sanctions imposed by Donald Trump. I mean, that is just madness. It's just craziness. And craziness seems to be what's in bloom in America today.
Right. Well, you're right about the public opinion polls. In fact, Liz Peek, she's from the Chicago Tribune,
yes.
I think. And she wrote an analysis about this today saying those polls are not really saying like what people – or the headline is I guess the content of the poll is not the headline or something like that. That he's not – he's having a few problems, Mr. Biden, that is. But I just find, let's start with the Iran nuclear deal. You mentioned that. That is, to me, you know, he's surrounded by people who apparently want to undo everything that President Trump did. And I guess one of those deals was the Iran nuclear deal and the Paris Climate Change Accord, which nobody has mentioned that since we got back in it. Have you heard about the Iran? I mean, is there still something called the Paris Climate Change Accords? Because nobody talks about it anymore, Bill.
Apparently, we're getting back into it. And now, apparently, also, some of the scientific magazines are getting in line behind the woke philosophy of the administration, and they will call it the climate crisis. Rather than the climate issue, they're now trying to whip up this idea that we are in a crisis, and I guess this follows AOC's notion that if we don't do something in 14 years, the universe will disappear, and they'll even close Starbucks and things of that nature. And I don't see it. We're being told it's now settled. The science is settled, and we're in a tremendous crisis. You also see all these rules being made around the country in the woke states that cars will have to be electric powered by 2030 or 2035. Very little coverage, very little discussion of anything. The things just get done. The New York Times and CBS News say amen, since it's the Biden administration. We have a United Nations ambassador who speaks against her own country at the UN.
Right.
And nobody says a word, except, of course, for the opposition party, which is now being shut out of social media. And I, by the way, one of the things I really fear next year, and I think it should be brought up, is that we have seen now how the social media basically operates on behalf of the Democratic Party. What happens if the television networks start following the same course and start refusing ads, political ads, from the Republican Party? It's a different ball game, because the television networks are over-the-air networks, which means they are regulated by the Federal Communications Commission.
Mm-hmm.
But they could simply say these ads do not reflect our values. And they could go on like that until they do enormous damage to the Republicans. And even if the FCC would say something, they could just make a slight alteration in their policies. But we, on our side, may have a real communications problem as the 2022 congressional elections are in sight.
Well, we saw some of that, Bill, in 2020 when New York Post had that article about Hunter Biden, and, you know, Facebook and Twitter did not run it. And, I mean, I'm sure that had some impact in the electorate, because people didn't have a chance to read about that story. But, I mean, but getting back to the Iran nuclear deal, this is, to me, dangerous, because China is looking at this and saying, you know, hey, we can just get whatever we want out of this administration, and that's how you get conflicts going. That's how you get China invading Taiwan, and that's also how you get the Israelis invading or bombing Iran. I mean, that's, you know, you could have these two confrontations completely brought about because of the weakness being projected by this administration, Bill.
That's absolutely correct. Everything that we do is watched carefully. And those embassies on Massachusetts Avenue in Washington each day send back their impressions of the United States. And if you look at the United States today, a divided country where violence is breaking out in American cities, where people threaten to shut down cities if they don't get a jury verdict that they like, where the military is being weakened by the teaching of crazy racial theories to troops. If you were a Chinese general looking at this, what advice would you give to the Chinese government?
Yeah.
You would say to the Chinese government, we can get a lot out of the Americans during these next 4 years. And they might even advise the Chinese government to make an attempt to take Taiwan. They could say, this is the time to do it. The Americans will never resist. And they could be right. As you said, this is how conflicts get started, when people doubt the resolve of the United States.
Well, that's it. And you know, the question right now is, of course, Taiwan, I mean, what has been done to prepare the American people? I mean, if I was President Biden, I would be doing with Taiwan the same thing that President Bush, the second President Bush, did with Iraq. You know, where he went around the country for much of 2002 explaining the danger of Iraq so that people at least were prepared for his decision. I mean, if China were to invade Taiwan tomorrow morning, the American people are not ready for an American reaction. I mean, many people would say, why are we even supporting Taiwan? What's the big deal? And so, I mean,
it
just seems to me that at this moment, we need to prepare the American people for that, and that's what the president does, Bill. That's the job of the president.
Absolutely. Well, there's no leadership. I mean, it was interesting last week that when the Japanese prime minister visited Washington, he was greeted not by the president but by the vice president. The president, of course, later came out to meet him and meet with him extensively. But that is something that should not be. It is the president who greets foreign leaders, not the vice president. I don't know what the deal is there, or if there is any deal. Was he not feeling well? Did he not have a good enough haircut? Is it that he was watching a favorite soap opera on television? I don't know. But the role of Kamala Harris is strange. It's strange. We don't know exactly what she does as vice president. We do know that she is being sent to Central America to do what? I don't know. Maybe to say that, you know, we really don't like what you're doing. Could you do better? And yet she is sent out to greet foreign leaders. Is she being prepared to take over relatively soon as president? If she is, this country is going to be in a lot of trouble because there's nothing to indicate that she's qualified for the job.
Right. And also, again, I go back to the idea of preparing the voters. I mean, you have to prepare the voters, and we were never told during the campaign. I think a lot of us suspected this, but I think in general we were never told if you vote for him, you're going to get her pretty soon. I mean, there were many people who, you know, cynical people who thought that's what they were doing, but that's different than actually doing it, Bill. I mean, it's like people are going to say, "Oh, wait a minute, where did she come from? We didn't know that there was a deal here." It's just transparency, I guess that's what I'm saying about it. Obviously, everybody knows that if the president retires or resigns or passes away, that the vice president becomes. I mean, everybody knows that. But this smells to me like there's something going on. There's some secret stuff going on that we're not being told. That's what I fear here, Bill.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, and especially in a situation where there are international threats that could involve the loss of American life, we are being told nothing. Now, if you go back to the fourth term of Franklin Roosevelt, when President Roosevelt ran in 1944 with a new guy, Harry Truman, on the ticket as vice president, we weren't told much then either. The president's health was deteriorating. Anyone who looked at him knew that. But the American people were never told that. In those days, the standard of the press was you don't report on the president's health. That is his personal business. It was a poor standard and one that I think has kind of melted away. But today, the attitude of the part of the press is, well, even if we know something and it can be reported, it won't be reported unless it helps the president. And I'm afraid right. That is the attitude of many people in the press. They are anti-Trump, pro-democratic, pro-socialist, and nothing is going to get in their way. It is a frightening time. It really is, because the press has abdicated its responsibility, and nobody is taking its place.
That's right. No, you're right about that. Well, let's talk about a very important topic, and that is what's happening in our cities, not just what could happen in Minneapolis, but I'm talking about these shootings that are now seem to be happening on a daily basis. There was a little girl who was killed in Chicago at a McDonald's drive-in. I guess she was in the wrong car at the wrong place, I take it. But two people, you know, apparently get out of one car and then they go after another guy in another car. It's kind of reminiscent of what we saw in Mexico, in Juarez, and many of these, you know, one group fighting for territory against another group, and then, of course, innocent people were always killed. And then, of course, what happens, Bill, as I'm sure you've reported many times, then you have this great outrage about people being killed and why we need more gun control. And it's frustrating because nobody wants to talk about the underlying issues. Nobody wants to talk about why this violence is going on in Chicago. It has nothing to do with guns. These criminals would get guns anyway if they really wanted to. Nobody has ever stopped a criminal from getting a gun in the United States. So, I mean, it's frustrating because you know there's a problem, but nobody wants to have a serious discussion about it, Bill. So nothing happens. I guess that's what I'm saying, Bill.
Well, we are not providing any platform for a serious discussion. The most serious discussions I see are on Fox, which I think is doing a reasonable job of covering the news. I mean, CNN has become almost laughable. There isn't even a news operation. And the great newspapers are all in the pocket of the Democratic Party. So the kind of serious discussions we had on issues at one time really don't exist today. You know, I recall back in 1960, the election campaign between John F. Kennedy and Richard M. Nixon, that the main foreign policy subject was Taiwan. Isn't it interesting? And this was decades and decades ago. The question was whether we would defend two islands off the coast of China, Quemoy and Matsu, which were, in the view of Richard Nixon, part of the what he called the area of freedom. I don't think the Democratic position was that committed to those two islands. But it was the major issue. We really expected trouble from China. Now, here we are, 60 years later, and we expect trouble from China again on the same issue. And I think that if you took a poll of Americans, most of them don't even know where Taiwan is, and they have a news media that isn't telling them.
Well, and they would, I guess many Americans would ask the question, why does my son have to go fight to defend Taiwan? And since nobody has explained it to them, it's not a crazy question, Bill.
It isn't. One of the editors I used to work for at the New York Times said that one of the purposes of a newspaper in this day and age, the day and age of foreign policy, is to explain why what happens in Southeast Asia might result in the drafting of a boy in Des Moines, exactly the way you put it just a minute ago. And nobody is explaining it. We seem to be in a post-foreign policy era where nobody even wants to talk about foreign policy. Weak administration, weak press. I believe that we are going to see more and more evidence that the administration is really being run by either Barack Obama or his cabal in Washington, which is why we're getting so many of these very left-wing crazy policies, and that the country could really be in for a great deal of trouble. On the other hand, it is also expected by most economists that the economy will start to boom later this year as a result of the lifting of the coronavirus threat. And that may be true, and it may make it very hard for the Republicans to gain in 2022, that and the press blackout of Republican arguments. So we have a very complex period coming up. It is worrisome. It is worrisome in areas that we have not had to worry about for many, many years in this country, and that is we seem to have institutional failure. Certainly, yeah. Failure on the part of the press, and the possible destruction, really, and I think that's the proper word to use, the possible destruction of the Supreme Court. I think they are absolutely intent in the Democratic Party of enlarging the court. We keep on saying, with some degree of correctness, that it is unlikely that Congress will actually act on it, and Nancy Pelosi has said, really, that she's very skeptical about it, but I think in the end, if the president is pushed by the woke parts of his party, he will suddenly come around and realize this is something we should have done long ago. There will be the echo chamber in the press, and there could be a move toward adding four justices, which essentially would destroy the court because it would destroy the aura of independence that it has. If you add those four justices and they're all left-wing Democratic Party justices, I think the American people will lose faith in the court.
Well, and I think you would see a lot of states simply throwing up their arms and saying, we're not going to go along. I mean, I there's so many negative things that could happen from packing the court. Now, what I would propose to the Democrats is, because the argument is that we have 13 federal districts, and we should have 13 judges. That's the argument, I guess, from Representative Nadler. But what I would argue is, okay, if you want to do that, let's make the next presidential election a referendum on that, and let the next president elected in 2024 of either party make that call about expanding the court. If you're doing it because you think we need more justices because of the population and so on. But obviously what they want to do is they want to do it this year. They want to pass it. So they do it when they have, at least the ability to break a 50-50 tie in the Senate bill, and that is so cynical. I don't think most of the country would go along with that, and it could really blow up the country. That's the thing that nobody ever wants to talk about, is the impact that this is doing on a country that I think every day seems to be growing further and further apart, more blue and more red, Bill.
Oh, yes. The divisions in the United States are severe. And one of the things that's making them severe is the fact that the Democratic Party really does believe, in my view, this is just my opinion, but I think it is widely shared, the Democratic Party really does believe in a one-party system. And I think that's what they're going for, that they will allow a little bit of dissent within their own party, but absolutely no admission of anything from the other party. I think you said before we went on the air that the policies of this administration seem devoted to the idea that anything Donald Trump did, we will undo, no matter how good it is. And the effect on people will be of secondary importance. The importance will be the ideology. But I think we are in that situation. There is the possibility of one-party rule in America, especially if the Democrats are able to get both D.C. and Puerto Rico into the union. That's four yeah. United States senators. It is hard to overcome that. And
if that happens, that happens, and then we would be, as you say, a one-party state. And I don't know what happens after that, but I don't think anything good's going to happen after that. So hopefully it never gets to that. But I can tell you, I mean, Texas is suing the administration over this Remain in Mexico policy, saying that they need to put that back on. Texas is calling on the administration to label the cartels terrorist organizations. So it does seem, a lot of states seem to be standing up and fighting back, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. And you see, especially Texas, which has spunk and seems to be, I think right now, probably in terms of spirit, the leading state in the United States. People are fighting back. But, you know, back in the 1960s, we had many of the same issues and much of the same despair. And it was Nixon, a man I didn't particularly like, but a man who has a great deal of political acumen, who said there is a silent majority in America. And he was right. There was a silent majority in America, which is how he got elected in 1968. I think there's a silent majority today. I think the problem today is that to become unsilent in many of our situations today requires a certain amount of personal risk. If you are living in an American city and you want to go up against the Democratic machine and you are an employee of a large corporation, you may have some trouble at work because the corporations are becoming woke. And all right. you have to do is be labeled a racist, even incorrectly, even wildly, and you could have your career in shambles. I think what we are having today is a kind of a left-wing McCarthyism that has spread far and wide, much larger than McCarthyism ever spread in the early 1950s, and that people are fearful about speaking out, fearful about taking any actions that might offend the powers that be. Very bad situation.
Yeah, well, imagine if you worked for a company and you publicly said, I disagree with the company about moving the All-Star game out of Atlanta. I mean, that could cost you, if not your job, it could certainly cost you some improvement, some promotion opportunities, Bill.
It could, and it could also cost you something else, and that is if it becomes known that you're a reasonably prominent business person, it could cost your children their situation, their status at school, because we mm-hmm. know that the woke mentality is now infiltrating into school systems, school boards, high schools, elementary schools, and that it isn't going to be long before children are singled out for the sins of their families. We have seen this in other countries. We've seen it in dictatorships.
We saw that in Cuba.
And of course.
I mean, I saw that in Cuba. I mean, my goodness, we saw that in Cuba. That's, you know, I was old enough to see that. So, yes, it's not theory to me when I hear stuff like that because I remember it quite well. As a young boy in Cuba, going through that. Let me take a little break, Bill, and then we'll come back and we'll continue our conversation with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, our weekly conversation with Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda. Bill, you were talking before about schools singling out the students. I lived through that in Cuba. I know what that's like. And so when people bring that up, it's not theory. I lived through it. I know what that's like, you know, where the kids in the school would be singled out and kids would literally be separated as to who supported the regime and who didn't. And, you know, I remember that quite well. So I was old enough to remember that, Bill. So, you know, hopefully that doesn't happen here, but it can, because it has happened somewhere else, Bill. So that's when you mentioned that, it really reminded me of a time in my life when I went through that, Bill.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that anyone who has ever come from a dictatorship will tell you about the effect on families. Dictators mm-hmm. know how to deal with these things. You know, it is not simply a question of threatening the offender, who might be a father, but making it clear that the rest of the family will suffer if the father continues his descent. And, you know, we always say in America, it can't happen here, but it can happen here. And mm-hmm. I'm afraid that the institution that we have always depended on to make sure it doesn't happen here, the press, has now become part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Absolutely. Bill, this week we have seen, talking about public schools and private schools, we are seeing more and more parents from coast to coast standing up against the schools, private and public. There's a very famous incident there in New York of some parents who wrote a letter, I guess, saying their kids are coming out of the school because they were looking at the curriculum and all they do all day long is talk about how rotten the United States is and racism and everything else. It seems like nobody teaches anybody anymore about reading and writing. It's all about how racist the country is. And some parents are pulling out their kids. This is happening across the country. More and more parents are standing up. I mean, that's a good sign in a way that more and more parents are standing up, and it's a movement. I think it's going to grow, Bill. I really do, because a lot of state legislatures are run by the Republicans. 31 of the 50 state legislatures are run by Republicans, and you're seeing more and more Republican legislatures saying, we want to give the money to the parents and let the parents choose the school, Bill. So there may be a good ending to this, but it's not a good situation, as you say, in the schools with this philosophy that they're teaching the kids that, you know, the United States is this horrible country. I mean, it's absolutely incredible, Bill.
That's right. And apparently any dissenting voice is called racist or obsolete or extreme right wing. But it is also true that we are seeing parental revolts in different parts of the country. Now, some of them are coming, interestingly enough, from school districts which are wealthy, either school districts that are wealthy or from private schools in New York that are, as they always describe them, as posh. They're not very posh, but they are places where you find a lot of powerful people and comfortable people. I think that's good. I think it's good when people will stand up and say, I do not want my child going to the school anymore, and here is why. We've had just in the last few weeks letters sent by a faculty member at a New York private school, one by a parent at one of the most prestigious private schools in the world, basically saying, we don't want our children taught what they're being taught. One of the letters was written by a father from whose daughter goes to the Brearley School, which is a really posh school in New York, and which is one of the most prestigious private schools in the United States. And he wrote it to many other parents from Brearley, made the letter public, basically saying our kids are not being taught what they should be taught. As you said, they're being taught a racialized curriculum. Now, the question is how far this spreads. We have seen a revolt in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is one of the most affluent counties in the United States, and where members of the school administration, of the school establishment, have actually conspired basically to shut up anyone who disagrees with them. And we've seen it in Newton, Massachusetts. We've seen it in some other places. It's going to take a much larger movement, but that movement may be there. One of the characteristics of the pandemic, we are told, is that parents are speaking more and more to their own children. They are with their children much more, and they're hearing about what school life has been like, and they don't like what they hear. They're hearing about stories of teachers propagandizing kids. It's amazing, by the way, that many kids are aware of it. They're aware of it when they hear it. I don't know why that is. That's a story in itself, but it will never be told by the mainstream media. But they hear things from teachers that don't strike them as being true, and they are coming back and telling their parents. A revolt that will have to will require parent groups around the country to unite and to be in touch with each other, and that's what you're also seeing. You're seeing help being given from one parent group to another. We're hearing a lot of discussion. You can be sure that the New York Times is already preparing a large piece on this, basically declaring this a kind of new fascism, because that's the way they think at the New York Times. But I think that the parents in the end can win. What it will take, though, is a lot of local action that has impact, and that is replacing school boards. There were members of a school board who resigned in California recently when they were caught ridiculing parents on an open mic. It will take local elections. It will take a lot of persuading of parents locally and demands of the schools. First of all, for transparency, I favor a policy in which parents can visit anytime they wish. They are public schools after all, and the parents should be able to see what their kids are studying. They should be able to read the materials. There was one suggestion made by a woke teacher, I don't recall exactly what school district it was in, to hide materials from parents. I mean, the woke people are literally at war against the parents, and of course that is absolutely unacceptable. We have to restore the notion of a school being a public school, a school run by the public for the children, and not run for the benefit of a union or for the benefit of some ideological group.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because you touched on a lot of very interesting topics there that triggered a lot of different thoughts that I'm watching myself here in Texas. You talked about parents. Here in Texas, you have actually mothers, and you got to give credit to the mothers here there because they're the ones who very often – they're the ones who do the homework with the kids, you know. So one of the benefits is that these mothers are actually now seeing what their kids are doing because they're watching it on the laptop, and you know they're watching what the kids are learning, and they're going, wait a minute, this is what you're learning. This is what you're learning about American history. So that's what's happening. In a way, the pandemic has exposed all this woke that maybe would have never happened had there not been a pandemic. The other thing that I see is that this is becoming a political issue. And, you know, we have local elections coming up here in next month. And for the school board is part of those elections. And this is an issue in these elections. You know, candidates are talking about this. You have, you know, more and more Republican legislatures across the country saying, you know, we want to look into this and, you know, we want to give them. So in a way it could be, Bill, the big issue of 2022. We were talking before about the 2022 election, but I can really see this being almost like a Tea Party type movement. The Tea Party in 2010 and now this one here in 22. There's a lot of common ground between the two. And I can see this being a real movement here. Not just in Texas, but frankly, even in the blue states, because there's a lot of dissatisfaction in these blue states with the schools as well, Bill.
Oh, absolutely. And the dissatisfaction is national. But one of the things we are up against is a kind of momentum in blue states that favors the political left. Look at Oregon, how horrible it's become. Portland has become almost a joke of a city. And yet it is very, very difficult to get the administrations to change. Look at New York. New York is deteriorating very rapidly. This is the last year of the administration of Comrade Bill de Blasio, who I think is very much a Marxist. But the candidates vying to replace him are not very different from him, because it is such a heavily Democratic city, and the Republican Party in New York is not that organized, not that good. We don't have a star like Rudy Giuliani to run, and that is the problem. Whoever the Democrats nominate will probably be elected, and we'll have exactly the same thing. Crime rate is going up. After years of progress, the crime rate in New York is going up. 95% all the victims of fatal shootings in New York right now, 95% are African American.
Mm-hmm. Right. Amazing. And yet yes. Nobody talks about that. Nobody talks about that.
Nobody. Lives don't matter.
Yeah, apparently so. They don't matter. You're exactly right. But I guess one of the problems, Bill, that that many of these blue cities are going to have is that, they may be dominated by the liberal left, but eventually they're going to run out of money. I mean, they basically will survive, I guess, this year because of this COVID bill that sent a lot of money to a lot of blue states, but that's not going to happen again for a while. So what I think could happen in many of these blue cities is what actually, you know, blows up the public school system is that they just don't have the money to do it, and there's no way they can raise taxes. So it becomes kind of a almost like a suicidal mission that these cities are in, Bill.
Well, that's interesting that the word suicide is being used more and more. And I think some writers have said that the Black Lives Matter movement, which is not the black community. Those are two different things. The Black Lives Matter movement is forcing cities to commit suicide. But what they hope for is more bills like the one you just mentioned, in which billions of dollars are being given to failing states to bail them out. And, you know, who was it who said, it's been attributed to Alexander Hamilton, but it probably didn't originate with him, that democracies last until people realize they can raid the treasury. We are at that point now. People realize they can raid the treasury. They don't pay it back. Their children will pay it back. But the kind of forces on the political left that do this don't care about children. They have never cared about children. They don't even think women should have children.
Right.
They probably think there are too many Americans to begin with, so who cares about children? And they only think about the next 10 minutes. There are different ways to destroy a country, and military force is only one of them. Economic collapse is another. And economic collapse in this country or economic strain or bankruptcy can have a profound effect on our foreign policy as it did before World War II. One of the causes of World War II was the Great Depression. Nobody wanted to concentrate on foreign policy and rearmament. They just wanted to concentrate on their economic situation, which is entirely understandable. But it led directly to the picture of the Western powers, the free nations, being weak and indecisive. And it can happen again.
Absolutely. No, absolutely it can happen again. I mean, that's, what do they say, history repeats itself? Sometimes, unfortunately, it does.
It isn't actually history that repeats itself. It's the psychology of history that itself.
Yeah.
It's
human beings make the same mistakes. I guess that's what it is.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah, somebody said it. Some famous person said something along those lines.
George Santayana.
Yeah, explaining what I just tried to explain. But let's move on to another topic, Bill, of this, I guess, really the last 30 hours or so, and that's Representative Maxine Waters, who, I tell you, if there is a diploma for a lack of tact, it has to be for this lady. I mean, it'll be named after this lady someday, you know, because this lady goes to Minneapolis and, you know, I guess she decides that she's going to speak out and ends up, I think, saying some things that are pretty awful. There should be a call for this lady to resign from the House. It'll never happen.
Yes.
But this lady's beyond irresponsible, Bill. I mean, this lady said, you know, get in the face of Trump cabinet members, and now she's basically telling people telling people in Minneapolis, if you don't like the verdict, hey, just stay in the streets, something like that, she said. That is utterly irresponsible, especially for a congresswoman, Bill.
Absolutely. Well, Maxine Waters, first of all, is the definition of an airhead. She does not even live in her own congressional district in California. She lives in a mansion, apparently, that has been valued at $4.5 million outside her district in one of the whitest sections of Los Angeles, and she still gets reelected, you know. And this is, look, in at the end, you have to blame the people of the country. They elected these individuals. And
right.
Not only did they elect them, they keep on electing them. Maxine Waters, or she is known affectionately as Auntie Maxine, as if anybody would want her as an aunt. Maybe the crazy aunt in the attic. But that's what she's known for. She goes to Minneapolis, which is not her city, and starts lecturing people on what they should do in the streets. Should there be a move in the House to reprimand her, to even throw her out of the House? There should be, but I'm not so sure the Republicans have the courage to do it. They might be figuring, look, it'll never pass because the Democrats control the House. And also, we are trying to attract black voters to our party. Why should we expend any capital on something that has no chance of success? But
right.
She is, and you know, I cannot monitor every television network, so I don't know what every television network is doing. But I would bet they are not giving this much attention. Many, many major stories do not get real attention on the part of the press unless they help to advance the agenda.
Yeah, well, there is, you know, I don't know how many newspapers have written editorials about her here lately, but it seems to me that's where the action should happen. I mean, it should start with newspapers writing editorials calling for her to resign. Now, the New York Post apparently has an editorial today calling on her to resign. But, you know, that's obviously not a paper that Democrats are going to take seriously. But there ought to be more newspapers in the country, at the very least, you know, calling her out on this. As I said, I haven't read all of them. Maybe they will come out. But if you have editorials calling on her to resign or at least to apologize for what she said, then maybe there's a chance that something could happen in the Congress. But I agree with you. It's probably not going to happen in the Congress. But you like to see at least somebody on the other side, you know, a Senator Lieberman on the other side standing up saying, this is wrong, lady. You don't do this when you go into a city like Minneapolis. That's what you want to see. Some serious person on the other side standing up, Bill.
I think that's absolutely correct. And also, there should be a real campaign against her when she's up for re-election next year. There have been some people who've tried to run against her without success. It is a predominantly African-American district. They're very loyal to her no matter what she does. And you also have the recklessness of this congresswoman from Detroit. I can never remember her name, the Palestinian-American.
Yeah, I know who you mean.
She says we should defund the police and close all prisons. Now, that is an absolutely reckless, irresponsible proposal, especially for someone coming from a city which is so wrecked with crime. But she gets away with it because the people of the city are loyal to her on ethnic grounds. This identity politics is killing this country. It's just killing it. And the Democratic
Party, especially harming black people
that.
Because they live in those
of
cities,
course.
Bill. Yeah.
Well, we went through the statistic before. 95% of the shooting victims in New York are black.
But this is what bothers me. I mean, this ought to be a question for every Democrat who goes on a national show. Do you agree with the congresswoman from Michigan that we should be defunding the police? Do you support what the congresswoman from California? I mean, they never get those questions, and that's the frustrating part, Bill. They never get those questions. I mean, there was a member, some Republican who went on one of the Sunday shows, I think Meet the Press, and the first question he gets is about this congresswoman from Colorado, whatever, who's talking about America First. Okay, that's a fair question.
Yes.
That's a fair question. But why doesn't the Democrat get a question about the defunding the police? That's the part that is frustrating, and President Biden certainly never gets those questions. And, I mean, this lady who's a UN ambassador, there ought to be a question about to President Biden the next time, if ever, he holds a press conference, or if Vice President Harris ever holds a press conference, there ought to be a question saying, do you agree with this lady that white supremacists, that our Constitution or our Constitution is based on white supremacy? Shouldn't that be a question, Bill?
Of course it should be a question, but they have no intention of asking it. I mean, I think the attitude of many of the people in the press today is we are leftists, we are liberals, and we have a right to impose our agenda and to lie about it if need be. And I think that is their attitude. Their attitude is that the highest standard is making a difference, that we're going to change this country, and if we have to do some nasty things, we'll do some nasty things. I also believe that there is absolutely no loyalty on the part of the Democratic Party to the very idea of democracy. I don't think they particularly care if it's a dictatorship, as long as they win. And what is lacking in the Democratic Party today is wisdom. It's lacking statesmanship. It's lacking the kind of people that they used to have, if only a small number, who in a crisis could be depended on to think about the country. I don't think they care about that at all. The titular leader of the Democratic Party in the House is AOC, who has the intellectual maturity of a 12-year-old. I mean, even Nancy Pelosi ridicules her. But the fact is that Nancy Pelosi is hanging on for dear life. And in the year 2022, if things go badly, this woman can wind up as Speaker of the House very easily.
That's
very
right.
Easily.
No, you're exactly right. But, you know, just in recent memory, Bill, you had two incidents where a Democrat was willing to stand up and challenge the party. You have, of course, Senator Lieberman, who stood up in 98 and criticized President Clinton over, you know, whatever happened in the White House. And then, you know, before that in 1992, when then-candidate Bill Clinton had his sister soldier moment, and he stood up to that, whatever she was, a rapper or whatever she was. And it would be nice, wouldn't it, if President Biden were to come out tomorrow morning and say, look, folks, we're not in favor of defunding the police, and all this stuff is crazy, and I think Maxine Waters should apologize. I mean, something like that. I think it would at least give me some confidence that President Biden is at least listening to what's going on in the country and not just coming out and signing executive orders, Bill.
Well, we are in a situation today where the national discussion has sunk to such a low level. Really, I think the lowest of my lifetime, that you can't expect to guarantee any outcome in any situation. You know, there was a study once done at the University of New Zealand, of all places, as to why the press in World War II was as good as it was, and why the reporters were as sound as they were. Not perfect by any means, but good. And I believe the researcher came to the conclusion that it was because the journalists at that time had gone through hard times themselves. They knew how serious things could become in a society, and they were mature. Mm-hmm. They were much more mature than the ones today. We use the word crisis irresponsibly. It's vastly overused. But if we have a crisis in America today, it's a maturity crisis. We are becoming an adolescent nation. And I think this is not original with me. I think other people have made that same comment. And I fear for a country that is operating at this level. I really do.
Oh, I totally agree with you. I mean, all you have to do is look at Maxine Waters. I mean, you don't have to look any further than that, or that other congresswoman from Michigan. I mean, for someone to say that we should defund the police and open the prisons, I mean, that almost, I mean, what was she thinking? I guess that's all you can say. Last topic, Bill, I wanted to mention quickly here before we run out of time, and that is the border crisis. I guess it is a crisis now. The president is calling it a crisis. But I get the feeling, Bill, I get the feeling here on this so-called border crisis that Vice President Harris is distancing herself from it. She wants no part of it. And she's on her way to Guatemala, I guess, to talk about the history of Central America with the president. I mean, I have no idea what they're going to talk about. You know, she's going to say, well, we want to get to the root of the problem. Well, yeah, the root of the problem is that they opened the border, Bill. That's what the root of the problem is.
Yes.
I mean, well, they're really not very complicated, Bill.
No, she's doing one of these root cause missions. We used to get them in the Middle East all the time when people on the left tried to explain away terrorism. They said, you have to look at the root cause.
Right.
You really must look at the root cause. So this is, you know, they're at it again, and they'll probably say that the root cause was Donald Trump, and you know, now that the root cause is now gone. And, you know, we are in a situation where we're letting so many people into the country without being checked for COVID-19, without having anything checked, including their political loyalties and their national mm-hmm. loyalties. They are put on a plane. They're sent to cities that don't want them, especially given the disease situation. And it's growing. It's not reducing. The situations under the Biden administration always seem to get worse and worse. Mm-hmm. And then maybe a light goes on over the heads of some journalists, and they say, maybe this is intentional. And maybe it's intentional. If you look at the radical left, this all plays right into their playbook. And one has a right to be concerned.
No, you're right. I mean, because clearly they want to flood the country with people. But I can only tell you that it looks very different from down here than it does from the newsroom of the New York Times. Because down here, people are reacting to it. And I saw a statistic the other day, and I'll close with this, that his support, President Biden's support on immigration is pretty low. And even among Hispanics, it's low. I mean, the idea is that every Hispanic supports illegal immigration. No, not at all. And in fact, what I think people object to, Bill, is not so much where these people are coming from, but the chaotic nature of it. That's what people are saying. Wait a minute, this is crazy. You're just letting anybody into the country. Anybody shows up and they get in because they get in. I think a lot of people are saying, wait a minute, it shouldn't be that easy for reasons like you stated. You've got the virus. You've got the political affiliation of these people. I saw a report this morning, Bill, that there was a reporter down there who was saying that these kids are complaining that they're being sold by their parents to come up. I mean,
yes.
There's all kinds of – we're being given this romantic story that little children are walking 900 miles to the border. No, they're not. They're being brought there, and somebody's paying. And the whole thing is shameful, really, especially from people who said that what President Trump did was not humanitarian, Bill.
Well, yes. Isn't that the exaggeration? I mean, he was this cruel man with orange hair, and what's happening
right
now is far more cruel. But since it's being done by Democrats, who do they blame? Donald Trump. I mean, if it wasn't for Trump, this wouldn't have been necessary. We all know that. And the sad thing is that the universities eat it up and accept it, and the press eats it up and accepts it. And, you know, we talked earlier in the program about institutional failure. That is what we're seeing before our eyes. And one has a right to wonder whether there will be a United States of America, at least a recognizable one, within the next 10 years.
Well, it's a question I think a lot of people are asking. I mean, you're not alone. A lot of people are asking that question because they're saying, you know, that what has always separated the United States from the third world is really the rule of law. And if that disappears, then what's the difference between the United States and a banana republic? Not any. So, yes, I know exactly what you're saying about that. Bill, as always, thank you for your time. Have a wonderful week, and I look forward to keeping up with Urgent Agenda. I don't know if we forgot any topic this week. There are so many of them that I hope we got to all of it, but it's been a very busy week, to say the least, Bill, and I think you're going to be pretty busy the rest of this week as well.
I am busy. It's harder and harder to find good journalism to refer readers to, but there is some out there. The list of important subjects is going to grow. It's not going to decline.
Yes.
It's in every area of American life.
Absolutely. No, it's getting pretty incredible. I mean, the stuff that we're talking about is even stuff that I didn't, you know, sometimes it's hard to believe we're even talking about it. I mean, the idea that 100,000 people walk into your country in 1 month is something that, you know, you wonder, gee, has that ever happened? Well, it did happen. I'm sure that it did. It's happened before, but it's been a very long time, Bill.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, you have a great week, Bill, and I look forward to our next get-together.
I look forward to it also, Silvio, and we will have plenty to talk about.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. Have a wonderful week, Bill, and thank you for your time as always.
My pleasure.
Thank you so much. Our good friend Bill Katz, the editor of Urgent Agenda, as we look back at another crazy week and look ahead to another crazy week. It's just remarkable, the stuff that is on the table to talk about. It's just remarkable. I mean, it's just one difficult issue after another. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and until the next time, have a wonderful day.